Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. We begin with a warning. The following interview is partially about a violent attack and a rape. While respectful, it is raw. It may not be suitable for all listeners. Krista Paravani is an acclaimed photographer who grew up in the Capital Region. She is the author of the new memoir, Her, about the life and early death of her identical twin, Kara, from a drug overdose, and her struggle to carry on after the tragedy. Krista and Kara were linked by a bond that went beyond siblinghood, beyond sisterhood, beyond friendship. Raised up from poverty by a determined single mother, the gifted and beautiful twins were able to create a private haven of splendor and merriment between themselves, and then earn their way to a prestigious college and to careers as artists, a photographer and a writer, respectively, and then on to young marriages. But haunted by childhood experiences with father figures and further damaged by being raped as a young adult, Kara veered off the path to robust work and life and into depression, drugs, and a shocking early death. A few years after Kara was gone, Krista read that when an identical twin dies, regardless of the cause, 50% of the time the surviving twin dies within 2 years. And this shocking statistic rang very true to her. Her, a memoir, is Krista's survival story. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Krista Paravani to the Roundtable this morning.
Thank you, Joe.
Living through what you lived through and then the decision to write about it, when did those two paths converge?
I started writing the book in earnest in 2009. I had actually just completed a solo exhibition of photographs, and I went back to my camera, and I found that I didn't want to take pictures, that I wanted to write, and specifically, I wanted to write about my sister. And I had a job, a wonderful job, teaching photography undergraduates at a local college in Keene, and I quit. And I decided to write full time.
When you think about the childhood that you had, which was rough, mm-hmm. Your parents had an abusive relationship, mm-hmm. and then you were both born here in the city of Albany.
Yes.
And you kind of went back and forth as the various stages of your parents' lives and their relationship went through turmoil. So even from that very beginning, there was a sense of instability. Did that make the two of you even closer, do you think, you and your sister, Kara?
I do think so. She was the torch in my family. She lit the way for me. And I think that in the middle of all of that instability, that we found great solace in each other. And we were really independent from our family in a way. Our twinship allowed for that. So we had our own world as twins. And since that was such a close relationship, it was a protection from that kind of instability. And I really do believe that one of the great benefits of my twinship was that it allowed for me to have a world that was open to sort of more loving possibilities.
You both went to Bard College. You both wanted to study writing. Ultimately, you change your major because you don't want to compete with your sister.
Yes, that's right. Kara was full steam ahead. She wanted to be a writer, and she, in no uncertain terms, she wanted to be a famous writer. I think I read that in one of her journals, actually, and I admired her tenacity. And at the same time, she made it very clear that she wanted to have all of the sort of subject matter of our lives, and that wasn't really open to me. And I was writing poetry at the time, and I looked at my sister's dedication, and I thought, you know, she can have that. I'll give that to her. And so I picked up a camera, and I was sort of a natural photographer, and I didn't look back.
Between 2000 and 2001, as you start your adult lives, mm-hmm. you both end up marrying. And it seems as though you're going upon separate paths and you're starting a solo life. And then in a horrible, tragic event happens where your sister is raped. And that, it seems, changes everything. I mean, that's sort of the moment that everything changes from a normal, quote-unquote normal, identical twin relationship to what you went through.
It absolutely changed everything. My sister became a different person after she was raped, and I don't think I knew at the time how to incorporate that changed person into our lives. And I think for Kara, it was incredibly hard for her to see me going on my way in life, happily married, and not have had that happen to me. She never would have wished that. But it was as if she was seeing herself and seeing herself in a way that would be impossible, you know, for her after having survived the trauma that she did. And in a way, I think seeing me for my sister was like seeing her own ghost, if that makes sense.
It should be noted as well that this rape was violent. It was an attack. She barely survived. She was attacked for several hours before she was able to escape. And so that trauma and the depression that followed was, I mean, certainly understood.
Oh, absolutely.
But devastatingly real to her and to, well, and of course to you.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the interesting thing about being the family member of somebody who has survived a rape is that I think, you know, the repercussions are much, much larger than what we think. A rape doesn't only have one victim. I think it kind of ripples out in this way. I think of it now, and I think that when my sister's attacker put his hands on her, he put his hands on all of us in some way, and all of the people that would ever love her, or even love me. And I think that it was a moment that was going to alter everyone in Kara's path in that way.
Her life changes dramatically because of the depression, which is crippling. And it heads her down a path of substance abuse, as well as wanting to become very insulated, not wanting to go outside, covering her body in tattoos. And it's ultimately the photographer in you that wanted her to get out. And you felt that if you could take photos of her and show her that she was still a beautiful person, that that would somehow snap her out of the depression that she was in.
I did think that, and that wasn't a wrong thought, as it turned out.
Right.
My sister went into the photographs that I took of the two of us with full gusto, and I allowed her to direct them. I, you know, the only thing that I said to Kara was, stand in front of the camera and be yourself. Do what you want. Those photographs, I think, were her way of speaking to me, and it was a really sort of in-depth conversation, and I think it was twofold. One, I think that those photographs gave my sister a kind of authority and voice that she didn't feel that she had in her life. And in the other, I think in the most sort of literal sense, they gave her the freedom to go outdoors and feel safe.
And the other benefit of those photos was that she returned to writing. She was writing about the photos.
She was. And at first she wasn't sure. She didn't like this idea that I was going to start something, because then she thought that, you know, as twins do, we're so competitive, that she was finishing it. But then she started writing pieces, and I would photograph those, and it became a real collaboration between the two of us.
The drug abuse still continued and went on through this process, and eventually in 2003, I believe, she goes and seeks help.
Yes.
And she goes to rehab. And within 4 months, her marriage has dissolved,
mm-hmm.
and she's pretty much back at where she started.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a glimpse of some good that was done from the rehabilitation, or did that help in the marriage, which just became a vicious cycle of then bringing her back into that world?
It absolutely did. I think that Kara's marriage was not going to be something that could survive the rape. And I don't think that if my sister had stayed sober or faithful, frankly, that her marriage still would have been able to survive. But I think that my sister was definitely given the tools and rehabilitation to make a larger life for herself, and one that existed without drugs. But returning from that facility into her same life with her ex-husband, her sobriety wasn't really tenable. And I think that her husband absolutely knew that. And as much as she wanted to stay married, she didn't have the commitment to stay married in a sense, because it reminded her too much of the person that she was before rehabilitation. And the loss of her husband at that moment, it was sort of a crucial mistake, because she was left without any support after she decided that he should no longer be in the house.
From that time, from 2003 to 2006, she's living pretty much alone in Massachusetts, but she's relying very heavily on you. You're newly married,
mm-hmm.
and that takes its toll on the relationship with your husband, because you're not consciously, of course, but it's really these two forces being pitted against one another. And depending on your vantage point, you're in the middle.
Oh, absolutely. I was very much in the middle. And my ex-husband was a dear person, and I'm sure he still is, and a great support to me during those years. But my sister was and grew increasingly jealous of his presence in my life. And I think seeing me in a happy marriage was very hard for her, because she was in a miserable, lonely, partnerless point in her life. And so I hate to think of it this way, but I think that she kind of had made a full-out attack on that marriage that I was in.
She was, while this was going on, she was finishing her degree at the University of Massachusetts. And eventually she received that degree and then moved back with your mother here in Albany.
She did.
And then just a few months, I guess a month later, she OD'd. So what do you make of the timing, in the sense of how much of it was coming back? Because you would think that once you receive the degree that maybe a new door is open and a new life could be achieved.
I think my sister had a very regular fear, and I think this is a normal fear. I think many people have this, that, you know, at the moment when you're about to finish something and the world is about to open up to you, there's that sort of bottomless fear of failure, that if you actually kind of go out into it and you don't make of yourself what you'd hoped, that will be confirmation of all of your worst fears about yourself and your abilities. So I think my sister was facing that very normal anxiety that people who are graduating from college face. But she took a very long time to finish her degree at UMass, and for very understandable reasons, of course. She had a difficult time finishing her coursework, and she needed more time to finish her thesis, her writing, because the benzodiazepines that she was on and the trauma, frankly, of the rape interrupted her daily work schedule. But I also think that her relationship with the University of Massachusetts, to her, because the rape occurred in her first semester of college, was the relationship of her rape. And I think she wasn't really ready to be free of that, because she didn't feel free of it. And I think it terrified her that she was going to have to go out into the world as somebody who was no longer affiliated with the university, and therefore for herself, no longer affiliated with her rape.
Following her death, she was 28 years old when she died, accidentally overdosed on heroin. And this is really where you come into the story, in the sense of how this affects you. And you write in the book about it really affects everything you do. It affects your job as a photography professor. It affects your health because you drop a lot of weight. You start using medication, prescription drugs, more than you shouldn't. And it obviously has a strain on the marriage. So and understandably, it's all-encompassing. How much of that were you immediately aware of, that your footing was starting to drop away?
It was the moment that I learned that my sister had died, really. I was driving in New York City. I'd been with my ex-husband. He had a reading that night, and I looked down, and my mother's phone number flashed on the screen of my cell phone, and I handed the phone to him, and I said, "You must answer the phone. I think my sister has died." And it was unbelievable. I mean, he of course, he didn't believe that that was happening, but in fact, it was. He answered the phone, and I stopped the car in the middle of traffic, and I got out, and I ran down the middle of the street until I stood at the bottom of the traffic light and looked up at it and started screaming. And I felt totally out of control and totally anchorless at that moment. And then it just sort of continued in this way that it was really surprising to me. I did not expect that when I looked at myself in the mirror that I would see my sister. And it was this sort of hallucinatory experience where I felt like she was on me.
A part of you.
She was a part of me, but she was also taking over me. It was as if I wasn't myself anymore, but I was my sister.
Like you were in her skin?
Like I was in her skin. I would look at myself in the mirror and I would see her body in her casket, her embalmed colored skin. And I didn't see myself. I didn't see the sort of vibrant and very alive person that I was. And I don't know if that was guilt. I don't know if that was just the trauma of having her seen her in that state repeating itself for me. But it was very real, and it was real for quite a long time. I would say it took me about 2 years to kind of free myself of that kind of thing. Although, it's funny because now it's been many years. It will be 8 years this June. And it has a sort of more positive resonance for me now. I take yoga about 4 times a week. Mm. And in the beginning of the yoga class, they have everyone do an om. And, that's your beautiful, strong breath that you're supposed to give it. And I do my om, and it's always Kara. And it's as if she's with me in that yoga class. And it's not destructive. It's just beautiful.
As you said, it took you almost 2 years before you freed yourself from that. That came after a suicide attempt.
It did.
That 2 years, what happened that allowed you to heal and ultimately get to a point where you could write about it in this book?
I had to change my life. First, I moved. I moved to Brooklyn to be closer to friends and to devote myself to writing. I needed to be out of the place where that I associated with Kara. And since that was Massachusetts, I really felt I needed to leave. And once I'd moved to New York City, I wasn't healed by any means. I was still occasionally taking the prescription pills that I thought I needed at that point. It wasn't until I started writing in earnest that I realized that there was this kind of magical thing happening with my manuscript, which was that I felt as if I was able to spend time with my sister again by going over our story. It was transformative because it was as if that relationship that I was having with my sister in those pages was ushering me into a more normal, regular life.
You're writing, and you get back to that normal life, which includes marriage to Anthony Swofford.
Yes.
Who's been on this show. As well as having a baby.
Yes.
So that seems as close as it can get. to be a happy ending.
Oh, it's such a happy ending.
But I would assume you think of your sister every day and how that, you know, as you say, it's a beautiful thing, but still, she's there.
She's absolutely there. And it's really bittersweet because in one way, I know that had I not lived through all of those years of loss, I would never have arrived at this place in my life with my beautiful daughter, Josephine, and my very loving husband, Tony. But she had to be gone in order for that to happen. I have to be the person that I am now in order to live this kind of life. So that's very difficult. You know, and I wonder what I'll tell Josephine about who her Aunt Kara is and how I'll be able to sort of make a healthy legacy for Josephine to have, you know, when she thinks about what her history is and who the people of her family are.
The book, Her, a Memoir, it is published by Henry Holt. Krista Paravani, thank you very much for being with us and sharing your story with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Krista Paravani's memoir is entitled Her. She'll be speaking Thursday night at 8 p.m. at the Huxley Theater at the New York State Museum. She'll be reading and signing her book on Saturday, March 16th at 7 o'clock at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck, and speaking at the Woodstock Writers Festival on Sunday, April 21st in Woodstock, New York. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Carry me for a while. It's your turn to lend a hand. Carry you for a while. When you come.